even where the current ruling of the Supreme Court overturns one of its prior decisions. Study will show you, I think, that the reversal is not nearly so abrupt as it would seem to the non-student or as it would seem to the reader of newspapers. The overruling of a precedent has been forecast by decisions which step by step, little step by little step, have gradually responded to the pressure of life and events and have gradually deviated from the earlier ruling. The deviations, I repeat, are due not to the arbitrary and whimsical and capricious judgment of nine men, but I think if you will be patient enough to study the decisions of the court in the context of the times, perhaps you will agree with me that there is an interrelationship and that you can see in the onrush of life's events the factors that operate to bring about changes. Let me briefly illustrate this by reference to the Gideon case to which Justice Marshall has referred. The Supreme Court decided this case in 1963. It held that all persons who were defendants in state courts and who were accused of serious crimes were entitled to counsel. Even if they were indigent, the state had to provide them with counsel for their defense. This case overruled an earlier Supreme Court decision, a case decided in 1942, entitled Betts against Brady. Betts against Brady held that the state was compelled by the federal constitution to supply counsel to an indigent defendant, but only where there were special circumstances. I hope I made that clear. Special circumstances were required before the state would be compelled by the federal constitution to supply counsel to an indigent. That was a decision in Betts and Brady in 1942. Special circumstances might be the defendant's incompetence, his extreme youth, his mental condition, and so on. But cases thereafter came to the Supreme Court and were decided by the court in a steady progression after 1942. And those cases clearly showed that the rule requiring the showing of special circumstances was unworkable and it was inadequate. The Supreme Court was driven in practically every case to define special circumstances. And the conclusion emerged inexorably. The conclusion emerged that special circumstances existed in every case where a man is brought to trial accused of a serious crime, confronted by the mysterious processes, the intricate processes, the subtle processes of the law, and confronted by the power and the skill of the state. That in every one of those cases, there are, so to speak, special circumstances that no man, as Clarence Darrow himself recognized when he was accused of a criminal offense, is capable of defending himself. So, gradually, in the course of the 20 years between the Supreme Court's decision in Betts against Brady and its decision in Gideon, it became clear that the rule of Betts and Brady was not adequate. Now, that became clear not in vacuum. That became clear in the context of a social, political, moral, and religious development in the nation. And this, to my mind, is the important point. Our national mores had changed. It was not long before 1942, strange as it may seem, that poor people, indigents, paupers, were regarded in some of the states as in the same category as diseased and rotten food. They were excluded from entry into states. There's a marvelous and a very dated decision of the Supreme Court eloquently expressing approval of the state treatment of paupers as if they were diseased food or unsound articles of commerce. But time changed all of that. And the period, and in the this period, this great period of 20 years between 1942 and 1963, our society had changed and was no longer willing to accept the view that an indigent or a pauper was a sinful person not deserving of protection or the aid of the state. So that by the time that Gideon came along, the result, I think, was inevitable that the Supreme Court would rule that every person accused by the state of a serious crime was entitled to counsel. Now, just to complete this process, you will see I have told you that the disclosure by the time of Gideon of the inadequacy of the earlier ruling in Betts against Brady. Its inadequacy is a legal tool. The inadequacy of the requirement that special circumstances be shown. I have told you of the change in the national mores, the national attitude towards poor people in that period. Now, there was one other factor. And that was the court's own precedence with respect to the interpretation of the provision in the Fifth Amendment guaranteeing the right of counsel. The question is whether that provision was applicable to all persons, including indigents, and whether it would be applied to the states, or first whether it was applicable only to persons who could afford to hire their own counsel, and second, whether it was applicable only to the federal government and the states were free to do what they want to. And I say to you that as the third part of the basis for this change, the sudden, apparently sudden change in Gideon, there were the decisions of the Supreme Court on other aspects of the right to counsel. There were precedents. As early as 1932, the Supreme Court had ruled in a revolutionary decision that the Constitution of the United States, the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, required the states to furnish counsel to indigent defendants in capital cases where the defendant might be executed. That was the famous Scottsboro case. The decision was handed down not by the liberal or radical Supreme Court that some people think there is today, but by the nine old men. And the opinion itself, which is a very eloquent opinion, was written by a pillar of conservatism, Mr. Justice Sutherland. 1932, Scottsboro case. Case that's shocked the nation's conscience, in which the Supreme Court laid down the rule for the states that wherever a person may be executed at the end of the trial, he must be provided with counsel. if he can afford his own. And then the other part of it, to try to show you this process and how it develops, the other great development was that more and more of the states were adopting rules requiring the appointment of counsel for indigents in serious crimes. And so by the time that Gideon came along to the Supreme Court, you see, the pressure of events, the change in the national conscience, the change in our political and religious feelings about poor people and the rights of the individual, an accumulation of precedents, the court's own experience, all of those combined, so that really the problem presented by Gideon, problem of an advocate in the Supreme Court who was presenting Gideon's case, was not whether the Supreme Court would reverse his conviction because the state had refused to appoint counsel, but whether how many votes you could get to reverse it. That was the problem. It was foreordained by the process of life and of the law. I hope I've made this clear. I think it's tragic, really, that people fail to understand this. And when they see it, I cite Gideon to you in this detail, not because it's strange or different, but because it's typical of the whole process. And people read in their newspapers that the Supreme Court has decided so-and-so, and they think that the court, under the leadership of Mr. Justice Marshall, freshest person on the court, has just decided to do something radical again. That may sometimes be true, but it's not typical.